Welcome to the Serpent Cast with your hosts, Annabelle Gatt, Sophie St. Thomas, and Casey Halter.
All right, everyone. For today's episode, I really want to review my blessed breast oil from Catskill Mountain Herbals. I love it.
Fuck yeah. I love the name. Whatever it is, I don't care.
Yes,
I
what want does it do? What yeah. does it do?
So I just said my blessed breast oil. I want to clarify, this isn't like my oil that I came up with or formulated or anything. It's just that this is my bottle that I own. So I'm just really proud of it. So the brand is called Catskill Mountain Herbals. I heard about this brand through Susan Weed, who has a podcast that I listen to every week. Susan Weed is an herbalist who's been at it for many decades, and she is one of the people, or she is the person, I think, who came up with the whole wise woman tradition, which is just a way of thinking about health and medicine and taking care of yourself. But that's a whole other story. But yes, I found out about Catskill Mountain Herbals through Susan Weed, and I ordered this blessed breast oil, which I love so much. And
what do you do with it?
Okay, well, I'll read what's in it, and then I'll tell you what I do with okay. it.
The buildup.
Okay. So this is dandelion flowers, St. John's wort, cleavers, red clover, calendula, and a base of olive oil with a little tiny hint of lavender essential oil. So what do I do with it? I personally don't do anything with it. I have my partner rub it into my boobs every Monday evening. I choose Monday because Monday is the moon's day, and I associate that, of course, with the breast and its ability to nurture everyone around the world. Our first food.
It is our first food.
It is our first food. So I just think that if your partner doesn't want to rub oil into your boobs, you need to think about whether.
Just, like, dump him.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they would be someone who doesn't want to, like, play along or have any fun.
Take care of you or massage you or just, like, get down with your fucking boob health.
And, like, side note, like, being felt up, I feel like the attention of that. Yeah, like, it's all about men wanting to touch boobs, but just straight up breast massages feel really, really good.
Like, women want to touch boobs too.
That's true.
Just saying. I, like, do not have boobs, and I always
you
love
have
women
boobs.
With I have, like,
you have boobs.
All right.
She's talking about big tits. That's what she's talking about.
I know what she's talking about.
Fucking boobs, like Annabelle's boobs.
Like squishy boobs. I know. I don't have squishy boobs either.
So, of course, you know, breast health is very important. And one of the great things about having an oil is you can do self-massage. But I like having my partner doing it for me. Although, of course, if they weren't around, I would just do it myself. But I love having someone else do it for me. The person I love, because it makes me feel so good to be, like, taken care of. And I think that's something, when we talk about self-care, we think about, like, the ways we can, like, take care of ourselves and, like, how we do it ourselves to take care of ourselves. But I think, like, the best kind of self-care is, like, when your best friend or the person you love is, like, helping you take care of yourself. Like, that's just, like,
yeah,
the best.
It
is there
the
anything
best.
Better?
No, there's not. I really like that you schedule it on a Monday. Now I'm going to go kind of into more, like, sex writer speak, but, like, the idea of scheduling sex sounds really boring and unsexy, but especially if you live a busy life in New York City or everywhere, I think it's really easy to sort of just assume, like, your relationship or your partner is just always there, you know, and, like, be like, oh, well, I'll have to go to this event and, like, do this for work and see this and this and this, and then, like, sex is, like, the on the back burner. So I really encourage people to, if you're in a relationship or if you're by yourself and single and just need, like, a really good night in for masturbation, like, masturbation counts as sex. You don't need to have a boyfriend or girlfriend or partner to be getting off. But I think it's important to carve out time for lovemaking or breast oil anointments or any form of sensual touch and romantic time, especially with the partner, because I think we can put relationships on the back burner.
Yeah, without intending to. It makes me feel really good knowing that, you know, even if we're both really exhausted, maybe we're not going to have sex on a Monday, but I know that they're going to be there to, like, massage me and love me and pay attention to me in, like, a really deep way. And I love herbs, and this is, like, another way for me to, like, connect with the flowers that are in this oil. Like, I love doing that, too. And, you know, breast health definitely is very important, and being in touch with your body and, like, knowing what your body feels like. You know, you can lose track of that. There have been times I've like seen a mole and been like, where did that come from? And like, then you got to go to like the dermatologist and get it like cut off. But like, it's always a weird feeling when you see or feel something, you're like, hey, you were in there before. Like, what is that? And so it's really, I can go weeks sometimes, I think, without really like touching myself or feeling myself or really seeing myself. And doing this with my partner every Monday has really like slowed me down and let me keep in touch with myself in like a deeper way.
Ooh, can I talk about something?
Sure.
That you've also taught me?
What?
Annabelle has taught me so many wonderful things. I hope I'm not speaking too much on behalf of your partner, but I assume that he gets enjoyment from this.
Yes.
Yes. See, I think a lot of the times when we think about, in particular sex, although it's worth noting that while this is a sensual act, like you said, it doesn't necessarily mean you guys are gonna fuck. It's, you know, just an intimate thing to do to one another. It's really good to do things to your partner and, you know, in bed or other acts of love, but let people like making people they love happy.
Yeah. So, you know, my partner, you might think of this as like, well, he's not getting anything out of it. Like, sure, he gets to feel you up, but like, he's not the one getting the massage. But that's not true. Giving someone a massage or like connecting with them in that way it's inherently rewarding to do that, you know, and it creates more of an opportunity for us to share with each other. You know, usually after he does this for me, I want to at least like rub his shoulders or do something, you know, and it's not because I feel like I have to, because he just did something for me, but it's because I love him and I can't keep my hands off him.
And men love that shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think women think like, oh, I have to like give him like the best blowjob. I have to do this. Like sometimes you just need to lie back and.
People want to be useful.
Yes. And like, yes, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this whole thing reminded me, I was at the doctor's yesterday and like my doctor was like, so do you do self breast exams? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, not a lot of people do that. Like, do you really? And I'm like, okay, like, dude, I have pierced nipples. Like, I'm literally like in my boobs, like feeling them up like every day. And like, I think in general, it's just like that, like paying attention to your body thing is like, it's so shocking how few people like do that. I remember like I did an interview with like Dr. Pimple Popper like a few months back. Ooh. And she was like talking about how like, you know, people go like months without realizing that there's like a festering growth like on their back. And it's always like amazes me that like people like, I don't know, I feel like every day I like run my hands over my body's like feeling like the latest scab and like the latest like whatever. But like, no, like I feel like all of this self-care is like, no, you need to like check your shit out. Like you need to like feel yourself up. And like, if anything, like that benefit alone is like,
it's huge.
All for it.
I'll pass it around.
Oh yeah.
Oh, man, I wish we could put smells through a podcast.
Yeah.
That's the one thing we can't really, like, do long distance yet.
You can really smell the lavender in it, even though there's just a tiny, 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 tiny hint of the essential oil.
Mm, yeah, you can. It's really lovely. It definitely makes you want to cradle your head and...
All right. I'm just trying to look at the bottle, too. It looks well-worn. Oh, yeah. That's nice. It's not too floral. I was expecting like a floral bouquet. It's like sweet and blessed breast oil.
It smells like it was picked in the Catskill Mountains on a rainy day, and it's like it's not like a very feminine like, you know, rosy scent, which like, you know, a lot of times
that's not what people want. People want like body, woods, nature smells. You want to talk about Anton LaVey? He talks, he's like, will not shut up about how women should never like douche because the smell of vaginas is so good and the armpits so good. He also really likes the smell of pee. That you don't have to do what you want with pee, but I'm saying that I think we put a lot of pressure to smell like, you know, really like Chanel bottles, says the woman wearing Chanel perfume at the moment. But it's good to smell like natural things too, and I think it can be intimate or a turn on.
Yeah. And for everyone listening, we were talking about Anton Sandor LaVey earlier, who is the author of the Satanic Bible. But I think that's all for my product review, and we will move on to our guest. Danny, how are you doing?
I'm stoked.
Awesome. And by the way, Danny, what is your sign? We always want to know here at the Serpent Cast.
I'm a Gemini.
Oh.
Better watch out.
Uh-oh.
You're with two Scorpios right now.
Ooh. I like that.
Annabelle, didn't you tweet recently that Gemini is like low-key the best sign? I would love to hear a little elaboration. And
so my boyfriend's a Gemini, so therefore I think Gemini is the best sign.
Fair. Totally fair.
Danny, what do you think? Do you think Gemini is the best sign?
Well, I don't want to toot my own horn. I will tell you that my first crush was a Scorpio.
Oh.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
So I love Gemini-Scorpio synastry.
Me too. I love it. I'm writing a book on compatibility right now, and I'm really excited to write the Gemini-Scorpio chapter. I think it's going to be really cool. But anyway, let's get down to business. Danny, tell us, what are we going to be talking about today?
So, well, first of all, I'm thrilled to be here, and congratulations to all of you on this new endeavor.
Thank you so much. Thank you. We're so happy you're here.
And, you know, when I, you know, obviously there's so much to this title of the serpent, and I know that for all of you, the serpent is such a rich symbol. And I got to thinking that it could be really fantastic to explore serpents more in the sky. As astrologers and as those of us who are interested in learning more about astrology, we're very familiar with the 12 signs, which roughly correspond with 12 constellations that are on the ecliptic. But in fact, as anyone that has ever looked up at the sky before, there are all of these other constellations. And there is a branch of astrology that studies what are called these fixed stars. And sometimes when you get an advanced analysis done of your chart, you can discover that one of your planets or the sun or moon is close to one of these other stars that is beyond the 12 signs of the zodiac that we all know. And this is obviously, if you've ever looked up, there are hundreds of stars there. So it could get quite overwhelming, but I thought that we could focus on just a few of the constellations that have serpents and look at how they affect people.
Let's jump right into it. Do you have a favorite serpent star?
I do. There's a constellation that I want to start with, which is really quite fascinating, which is actually the North Pole. And I know that we often associate the North Pole with Santa Claus, but that's not exactly what... That's not what the first astronomers and astrologers saw up there. So what they saw was a huge serpent. The constellation is called Draco.
So, like Draco Malfoy? Wait, what's your Harry Potter house? Do you know it?
You know, I haven't run my Harry Potter house.
You've got to.
I know, I'm a bit resistant to having to pick one because I want to be part of several. So, I'm a bit resistant to that one.
Continue, though. I'm excited to hear there's something to the North Pole other than Santa Claus.
Yeah.
I think other pagans listening will feel the same way.
I think that Santa Claus in some ways has been a coping mechanism to avoid the much darker insight. Now, here's something fascinating about the North Pole. If you go out to the sky at night, what you're going to notice is that the sky doesn't change. I mean, it changes, actually. So there are constellations that rise, and there are constellations that set, and it's actually like this huge parade. But the reason why the North Pole is called the pole star is because the pole star never sets.
It's how you can always tell where you're going when you look at the North Star.
That's right. And some of you may know the term disaster. And the original meaning of the term disaster was to be without the stars, disaster. Because if the navigators couldn't see the stars, they didn't know where they were going. But what's fascinating is the way that we think about the north, you know, we think about, oh, Polaris, it's this cute little star that never sets. Well, it's actually much darker what the ancients saw, because they saw a huge serpent at the very top of the sky. And all of these other constellations were rising and setting, but the serpent was always there. The serpent never went away.
So I was doing like a little bit of research for this episode, just trying to come up with questions and like sort of related to that. I know that there has been a lot of snake worship that's gone on because sort of like the Groundhog Day, snakes come out right when it's supposed to be transitioning from winter to spring. And so in some, I guess, like really early pagan religions, snakes were worshipped because they were the idea of the coming of spring.
Absolutely. I mean, the snake is such a rich symbol. And there's so much there. And this idea of a creature that can slither on the ground, that can go under the earth. I mean, it's all there. And the other main concept that we're going to be talking about this entire hour is, of course, the concept of poison. Mm. Because a snake could poison you. And what a lot of astrologers picked up on was this dance with venom, this dance with poison.
That's very beautiful. I totally forgot about the poison aspect, I have to admit. But that's right. They can kill us. And this is, we're probably talking about pre, I'm sure they had herbal medicines, but pre, you know, snake antidote phase.
You know, the history of ancient medicine is a whole other wild topic, and it's hard to know exactly, because even if you have an advanced treatise coming out of Alexandria, how well was that known outside of Alexandria? It's just it's hard to know. In general, though, I think that the symbol of the snake that could poison you was powerful. And so, you know, I just want to go back to the North Pole for a second, because life is messy.
It is.
You know, and one of the biggest delusions I think that we have, because, you know, we're doing a podcast here in Brooklyn, New York, and no matter how spiritual and how much we all explore ancient texts, we still have a relationship with the work ethic, you know, and a lot of things I work on with all of my clients is like, look, darling, like life is never going to be perfect. I don't know what, you know, I don't know what you learned as a kid. And I don't know, you know, and we have this thing where like, oh, if only I did this different, if only I did this differently, somehow everything would be perfect. And that's actually quite delusional. Mm-hmm. And for me, this image that there's a huge snake that never goes away at the very top of the sky, I think it's very powerful.
I think so, too.
I think it's very powerful. And even for you during the serpent cast, you know, I would really encourage you. You know, we don't do enough stargazing, and part of that is because we live in cities. But go out sometime and learn to see the serpent at the top of the sky, because it's always there. And, of course, this gets into the nastiest, scariest star in the entire sky. Which is Medusa.
Tell us more. Now that's a lot of snakes.
Ew, yeah. She had the most because her entire scalp is covered in snakes.
Fuck yeah. Please tell us everything.
Yeah. Well, the story of Medusa goes like this, and this is Ovid's version, which I'm going to quickly tell. Medusa was a beautiful, gorgeous woman, and she was at the temple of Athena. And then Poseidon could not help himself. And so he ravaged her, which is the ancient euphemism for rape. So Poseidon raped Medusa. Athena, who, by the way, was very jealous of Medusa because Medusa was so goddamn hot, was like, Medusa, you broke the rules and had sex in the temple. And everyone knew that Medusa didn't try to have sex in the temple, but Athena was seizing on a pretext to punish a woman who was more beautiful than her, because Athena, with all due respect, was not a looker. And so Athena decided to punish Medusa for a rape that she was not responsible for and turned her into a bunch of snakes and turned her scalp into a bunch of snakes. And any man that came near her would become petrified so that Medusa could never have sex again. Medusa was a traumatized, angry woman, obviously, because of what she had been through. And then I'm going to cut through all of the things that happened in between. And eventually she had to be slain because she was traumatized and acting out. And then Perseus actually cut off her head as a heroic act to prove himself. And then the Pegasus came out. And then Perseus got the head of the Medusa and then used it as a weapon to destroy a sea monster and save a woman named Andromeda. Yes, it's a rich story, so feel free to ask questions.
If you ever, well, I'm just going to plug, if you ever want to like really get into this, I would highly recommend the movie Clash of the Titans, which is this like absolutely awful movie from like 1970s that uses like the worst special effects and goes totally into this and is absolutely lovely. And I just remembered it.
Yeah. There is a star in the sky that represents Medusa. And it's called Algol. And I know Algol sounds like a bit of a strange word, and that is because it's from Arabic, which was Al-Ghul. So our word ghoul comes from the old Arabic term. And it is one of the most notorious stars in the sky.
I have a quick question. Sure. What degree is Algol? What degree? If someone is looking at their birth chart and they want to see if they have a planet on Algol, what degree are they looking at?
They're looking at about 26 Taurus. It depends upon the exact year they were born because the fixed stars are a bit slippery. They're always moving a bit.
So if you have a planet around 26 Taurus, so we're thinking like, 25, 26, 27, probably not much further than that.
Yeah, it's a pretty tight orb.
Very tight orb. You have a planet that if you have something there, you have a planet on Algol. So Danny, I will stop interrupting you now.
No, it's okay. No, you want to hear something that's really quite amazing about Algol is it's one of the few stars in the sky that blinks.
Hmm.
And so it's actually what's called a binary star cluster. And so there are two different stars and sometimes one of the stars blocks the other stars. And so sometimes its light goes away and then its light reappears. And so the ancients saw this as the eye of the Medusa open and closing.
Fascinating.
Now, of course, you say, so what do we make of this? So just to sort of play with what you're saying, Annabelle, here, what becomes very fascinating about astrology, and I wanted to use Medusa, this Medusa star, as a case study for introducing all of you to the concept of working with the fixed stars. Algol right now is aligned with about 26 degrees, and it depends upon the exact year that you're born because those fixed stars are always moving a bit because of an effect called precession. What's very fascinating is people that are born with a major planet at that degree of the zodiac, there's something about Medusa that's quite fascinating in their story.
What is that?
Well, let's talk about one, which is Princess Diana. Her Venus in Taurus, right next to Algol. Now, you all know, of course, that Princess Diana, with all due respect to Kate Middleton, Princess Diana was much more beautiful than Kate Middleton. Princess Diana was much more beautiful than Queen Elizabeth. You know that Queen Elizabeth II, I mean, she wore great clothes when she was young, but she didn't really have a lot of glamour. And Diana had a lot of tension with the royal family because of her incredible star power. You know, and there's a really famous story where, and the royal family sort of, they were a bit disgusted with how much the paparazzi were chasing Diana. And there's a very famous story that one day the press, they were at Buckingham Palace for the press briefing from, one of the Queen's assistants. And so they all got in front of the door at the appointed time and the doors opened and it was not the press assistant. Do you want to know who came out the door? The Queen herself. And the Queen said, you've all got to stop taking so many pictures of Diana. Because it was brutal. I mean, people would go up to Diana and they'd say, Diana, would you please let me take a picture? If I get one good picture of you, I can put my kids through school for 4 years. I mean, just really brutal what this woman was exposed to. and it gets more interesting. Prince Charles never loved Diana.
Why did he marry her then?
Well, because the love of his life, Camilla Parker Bowes, was not an aristocrat. And it's quite interesting, right? Because the first thing you're going to say to me is, well, wait a second. You know, Prince Harry married a commoner and William married a commoner. And this is actually Princess Diana's power. Is she completely changed the direction of the British monarchy because of her story and her power. And she had this terrifying beauty that challenged everyone. Charles never loved Diana. On the day that he married Diana, he sent a bouquet, I believe, to Camilla Parker Bowes and a note that was, I will always love you. And Diana found out.
That's fucking rough.
Yeah. No, but let's talk about this a little bit. Because let's just examine this for a second. Because if you were married to the Prince of Wales and you never had to worry about anything in terms of money, and your husband wanted to have a sham marriage, some people might go along with that. And, you know, Charles even said to Diana, he said, Diana, I'm not going to be the first Prince of Wales that doesn't have a mistress. I am a prince and the future King of England, and I'm going to fuck whoever I want to fuck. And fine, I married you to follow the rules, and you have an amazing life. You live in Buckingham freaking Palace. You know what I mean? Like, you're never going to want for anything. So just, like, cheat on the side and, like, just chill out. And there are a lot of women who actually might have been able to work with that. But Diana couldn't. She couldn't. And what happened is that Diana became very disaffected with the royal family. She did something very, and, you know, and we talk about, what is this term, malefic? Because, you know, people say, oh, Diana, you know, Algol is a malefic star, or this is a malefic. Well, she did a lot of very negative things that really, really screwed up the royal family. You know, she went public. She told everyone about Charles's affair.
I'm going to interject quickly. For our listeners at home, when astrologers talk about a planet or a star being malefic, what we mean is that it's very difficult to work with, that it could be dangerous or harmful or frightening in some way.
Thank you, Annabelle. And when you think about Diana, she was very dangerous and harmful and frightening to the institution of the royal family. Diana responded to this problem in a very interesting way. So she was here, she was in the palace, she separated from Charles, and then she was living at Kensington Palace. And Diana did something else that no princess had done before, which she became very interested in the most afflicted people in society. And she wanted to love the most afflicted people, the most poisoned people in society. She was the first member of the royal family who touched someone who was HIV positive. And she did more to combat stigma against HIV in the 80s than nearly any other public person. And you think about Venus representing love. It's next to this very potent and powerful star, Algol, that is represented by Medusa. And you can see that. You know, you can really see that. She, you know, led that campaign to remove landmines. It's such sort of a fascinating story. And for those of you who are listening that are more that are interested in astrology, you know, Venus in Taurus is a great placement.
But Venus loves being in luxurious, right, luscious Taurus.
Right. She does. But Diana was beautiful, but being beautiful doesn't mean you're going to have a great life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sorry. I know that's harsh, but, like, you know what I mean? It's like,
no, it's true. So much is charisma. I mean, there's totally.
But it's what she did with her suffering that's so fascinating, and how that, and you, when we think about Medusa and how Medusa was, had all of these challenges, it's just so fascinating to think about how Diana worked through these things. And then, of course, Diana's tragic death in a tunnel in Paris. So yeah, I mean, that's just an example of how you can sort of start to use a connection with a serpent star to really build a story.
So are there any other snake stars that we want to talk about?
I want to talk about the Hydra, or the water snake in the sky. And the brightest star in that constellation is called Alphard. And it is at about 27 and change of Leo, which happens to be right next to the Mars of Donald Trump. And so we can say, well, what does this mean that Donald Trump's Mars is right next to the heart of the snake? And, you know, I don't know, there's a couple of really interesting things to talk about with Trump. First of all, Trump is a complete germaphobe and is obsessed with disinfecting his hands. More fascinating that's come out recently, Donald Trump is in mortal fear of getting poisoned and has been eating a lot of McDonald's food because he's convinced that other things are going to poison him. So, in fact, he's eating poisonous fast food because he's afraid that other food is going to be poisoned. Just wrap your mind around that for a second.
He's not the smartest, do we think? I'll let you continue.
Yeah. And, you know, and the third thing, you know, Mars is a lot about aggression. And, you know, the man spits venom.
Very, very interesting. This is 26 Leo, you said?
Yeah, it's 27 Leo.
27 Leo.
And for those of you, you know, that's right next to his ascendant. And so his Mars is also stronger because it's so near the ascendant. You can just think about how much Donald Trump's definition of masculinity, because it's Mars, is connected with snakes and poison. Mm. It's really quite fascinating. And when you think about how vitriolic he is and how he's often trying, and you know, what's so interesting is the way he spews venom. A lot of times it's not even true what he says, but it's so vitriolic, and that really appeals to this, I don't know, this snaky thing in all of us, I think.
The snake is always in the sky.
It's always there.
Always there.
He does speak very... He does. He spews toxic bullshit. It's not always intelligent. It's not... I mean, obviously, it's fucking harmful, to say the least. I don't know how much we want to get into that. I almost hate that it's related to snakes, since we named our podcast after a snake. Everything we've learned so far is so beautiful, but... Yeah, will you tell us a little bit more about how this positioning of him and his makes...
I mean, here's the thing, is that, you know, Princess Diana did something really positive with her algal placement, and, you know, although she had her challenges, and Donald Trump, you know, has obviously raised a lot of hell. And, you know, look, I mean, I know it's easy for us all to sit around and sort of look at Trump and be like, oh, well, we're so much better than him. But the truth of the matter is that all of us have our moments where we're completely, we give in to that snake-like force and we attack people when we don't need to. We misuse our aggression. And there are these two sides that we always have to keep in mind. Are we focused on removing the poisons from ourselves? Or are we going to choose to throw poison at other people?
So how can a commoner who doesn't know very much about astrology, other than just like the basic sun, moon, rising sign, find out if we have snakes in our own charts?
Absolutely. There's a great website that's free called Astrology King. And if you Google Astrology King fixed stars, what you'll get is this huge list. It's a bit intense, but it'll be this huge list of fixed stars, and then you can use the year that you're born to calculate where those fixed stars were when you were born, and then you can cross-reference that with your chart from astro.com. And then what you can do is you can, you know, it takes a bit of homework, but then you can learn about, oh my god, like maybe my Jupiter is right next to this star, and it gives you a bit of a guide.
Yeah, when you pull up your chart on astro.com, you'll see your circular wheel, but then you'll also see a grid near that that's going to list all of the planets and the degree that they are in on the chart. So, for example, I'm in Aries, but I'm not just in Aries. My sun is at 7 degrees Aries. So I would take a look at that fixed star list and see if there was a fixed star at 7 degrees Aries. So it definitely is going to take some homework to figure out where your fixed stars are. But here's the thing about astrology. It's not easy, which is kind of why it's fun and it's interesting. We're used to astrology kind of having being like this bite-sized accessible thing on Instagram or on social media, and all of that's really fun. But when you really get into astrology, you're going to discover that you're going to have to look at a lot of lists and a lot of graphs and a lot of charts and a lot of circles.
But that's sort of where the fun comes in.
It's definitely where the fun comes in.
You know, and the one warning I want to give to your listeners is the fixed star material is a bit outdated, actually. Because it's something that is very detail oriented. It takes a lot of time, and a lot of the work was done by astrologers in earlier generations who had a bit more of a fatalistic take. And
fatalistic, say more.
Well, I mean, basically they were like, oh, you're going to get poisoned and die. You know, I mean, that was like, if you had, it wasn't very nuanced, and, you know, I think we can all look at Diana, and the ancient texts sort of get Diana wrong. I mean, look, did she go through enormous suffering? Absolutely. But did she do something for humanity? Absolutely. Yeah.
So I know, Danny, you do a lot of interesting work with fixed stars, but I want our listeners to know what all the other interesting work you do, like your work with the AYA and everything else. Would you like our listeners to know?
Well, you know, we talked about my son being in Gemini, but you see, I was born at night, and my moon's in Virgo, so...
Me too!
Well, that's great. I felt that connection. So I do like to serve the community. So I'm the vice president for the Association for Young Astrologers. And what we do is we do a free video conference once a month for anyone that's interested in astrology with a speaker. Our next talk is going to be on February 28th. Kelly Surtees, who is really an incredible astrologer who splits her time between Australia and Toronto, is going to be sort of coming on to talk about professional development. But we've had a lot of really sort of incredible speakers. And it's free, and it's a great way to sort of get your toes wet. I also am one of the assistant organizers for the New York Astrology Meetup Group. And so we bring speakers in to speak for free. I mean, it's basically free. I mean, if you want to give $5, that's great. But again, it's another great opportunity to learn more.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Danny. We so appreciate it. Thank you so much for teaching us and all of our listeners about fixed stars and all the snakes up in the heavens. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Have a great night.
Thank you so much. Good night.